Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
Today is podcast number 41. It's Wednesday, October 26th, 2011. And we teased we talked a little bit about the spiders. Maybe we'll get to spiders today. One thing, though, that I wanted to start us off with, and hopefully this won't be too boring to the bulk of our listeners. I have a couple weeks now. I decided to go about the same time Tom Woods did. Hey, you know, I think maybe like Tom Woods found out that I was going to try this, and so he's like, hey, if Ben's doing it. You think?
Probably not.
Not hardly. He never did answer me back about doing a podcast, so, you know. But he's
calling him out.
But Tom Woods is like, I mean, he is probably the single busiest person in the liberty movement right now. I would go so far as to say, however much Ron Paul mm-hmm. is campaigning to become president, Tom Woods is probably doing twice that much work to get Ron Paul as president. And, you know, and that comes right off of like three major book tours for Tom Woods. Tom Woods? Is that who we're talking about? Well, we already did the brain damage episode, didn't we?
This is not the brain damage episode. This is the spider episode.
Spiders.
But anyway, so you're on the paleo diet.
Well, technically, no. You know, because to really do the paleo diet properly, you have to have, like, grass-fed beef.
Right.
And you have to, like, avoid all bean products.
Right.
And there's a lot of restrictions.
Right.
Oh, I'm not going to do all that.
Right.
I'm far too lazy. I was listening to...
Kind of like the way that I said that, you know, I'll avoid industrial seed oils, but I'm not giving up ranch dressing. Yeah. I mean, come on, let's be honest.
Let's get real here. I was listening to Jack Spierko's The Survival Podcast over at thesurvivalpodcast.com. And Jack had a really interesting guest on, and he was talking about this. And then Jack later revealed that he had been doing this mm-hmm. for a while. And Jack, much like what I'm saying for me, does not have the luxury of being able to make sure that every single chicken he eats is a cage-free, happy chicken that's eaten grub worms and beetles its whole life. Let me just get totally off the topic for a minute. Chickens are not vegetarians.
No, they are not.
I was in the store the other day, and they had vegetarian cage-free eggs.
Yeah, and they're so proud of it, too.
Yeah.
They're like,
we're advertising this. Chickens.
We're vegetarian chickens.
Chickens are not vegetarians. That's very unnatural.
Yeah, no. Like, throw a mouse in front of a group of chickens and
or
watch
a snake.
What happens. They're brutal.
Yeah, they're murderers.
Yeah.
They are savages.
They're vicious.
And they take joy in it.
Oh, yeah.
I remember as a kid one time, of course, you know, we had chickens and a sidewinder. This was out in the Mojave Desert. A sidewinder got into just that. It wasn't on purpose.
Right.
Poor sidewinder's like, I don't know how this happened. He got into the chicken coop.
Winding along.
Yeah. Now, when I say chicken coop, our chicken coop, we probably had a dozen chickens. And they were probably in a thing that's about the size of most people's living rooms.
Right.
It was a big enclosure that
right.
my mom had for her chickens. And plus, we let them out sometimes,
right.
too, because we were out way out in the desert, and so they could get out and poke around and stuff.
Right.
But, you know, then they knew what time to get back in. Otherwise, they'd be coyote food.
Nothing like a pasture-raised chicken for the coyotes.
Yeah.
Coyotes are primal. Or paleo.
Paleo. Anyway... boy, this is really going off the topic, but one day a sidewinder, and now that's a really fast snake.
Mm-hmm. That's a snake that I don't think I would want to, I think I would back off and let it go.
Yeah, they're pretty quick little snakes. They're not super poisonous, like some of the more, the diamondbacks or like the Mojave Green. We had the Mojave Green in the Mojave Desert that was a horribly deadly poison snake, but the sidewinder is really quick.
Right.
And
even if they're not poisonous, a snake bite hurts.
Yeah, yeah. So this little sidewinder accidentally gets in among the chickens, and they just went ballistic, fighting each other to get to fight the snake.
Yeah.
And when one of them finally was able to get the other hens out, these are hens, these are not even the roosters, the roosters didn't have a chance. The hens just crowded right in there, and they just kill the snake, and then they would pick it up and run around the coop, showing it off to the other chickens, squawking like, look what I got, look what I got, look what I got. And they were just brutal, and then they would fight each other to get to see who gets to carry the carcass of the snake around. And then, you know, when you kill a snake, it still wiggles a little bit, because its brain actually goes all the way down its spine.
Right.
So parts of that brain are still, the nervous system are still active.
Right.
So it's still wiggling now. And every time it would wiggle, they would all go nuts and go back to pecking it. And they just, we couldn't get it away from them, you know, to try to get it away, to say, don't eat the snake. They were ripping it apart and you know, devouring it.
Yeah.
In their little dinosaur nature was like, arr, arr, arr.
Yeah, chickens are not vegetarian.
Yeah, that's where we started on that, huh?
Yeah. I do find it interesting, though, that you know, I went semi-paleo back mm-hmm. in, what, March?
Mm-hmm.
And was singing the praises. And it took you until Jack Spearco decided to go on it that you thought it was cool enough to do.
Well, not really. I mean, I've been thinking about it for a long time. But that's where I was going with that. Jack said something that really made sense to me. He said he's not going with all of the proper paleo diet plan, whatever, from the books and all this kind of thing.
Right.
His basic plan is, if you can eat it raw, mm-hmm. then eat it. If you can't eat it raw, then don't eat it.
Right.
And so using that rule kind of makes sense to me. If you can eat it raw, then eat it.
Right.
And if you cook something, if you can eat it raw and then you can still cook it.
Right.
You lose a certain amount of nutrients, but you also make it easier to digest.
Right, and other nutrients are...
And sometimes they're enhanced.
Yeah. Because, like, tomatoes mm-hmm. have some nutrients that you can only get if the tomato is raw, mm-hmm. and then there are other nutrients that you can only get if the tomato is cooked.
Right, right.
So it's kind of a balancing act of you know, what you can... Okay.
What
so
you can.
What you can eat. I have no idea where I was going with that.
The tomato cooked or uncooked.
In it. So, you know, you don't have to keep a raw diet, you know.
Right.
You can still cook your food, but you need to choose foods that are acceptable to eat in their raw form.
Yeah.
You know, like wheat. You can't eat wheat in its raw form.
And really, you can't eat oats.
Yeah.
Corn, you kind of can, some breeds of corn.
Some breeds of corn.
But real corn, like, you know, Indian, like the Indians grew, mm-hmm. like the original maize.
Right.
You know, you really wouldn't, it's not really edible.
Right.
In its natural form. But then again, all of those are hybrids of grass.
Right.
And grass is really not food.
Right.
You know, even the seed of grass is not really food.
Right.
And all those, wheat, rice, corn, oats, barley, all those things are variations of grass.
Mm-hmm.
They're just grass variations.
And it's funny because you look at the things that are grass eaters,
mm-hmm.
and even they don't eat the seeds. You know, they
consume them,
but they don't digest them.
They pass out,
yeah.
And that's part of the natural process of how the reseeding takes place.
Yeah, because if you have ever been around horses or mm-hmm. cows or anything like that, you know that where they go to the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
the next couple weeks or so, that's going to sprout up a nice, green, lush patch of grass.
Because it's got built-in fertilizer, it's got the seeds already embedded in there.
That's how seeds...
That's the natural process.
...are supposed to, you know, seeds have these enzymes and these proteins that keep them from being digested.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to be digested.
Right.
You know, they're meant to be eaten and then passed through the system.
I'm thinking of raspberries specifically. Raspberries have those hard little nasty little seeds, and some people hate raspberries because of the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even try to chew them. I just put the raspberry in my mouth, smash it against the roof of my mouth with my tongue,
mm-hmm.
enjoy the flavor, and swallow it.
Right.
Now, the raspberry is designed so that it replicates itself. It reproduces
mm-hmm.
in two ways. It has seeds, But then also it sends out rooting shoots, mm-hmm. and its roots go out a long distance and come up with a new shoot.
Right.
So a raspberry will grow right in one area and try to fill in an area.
Right.
But then also the raspberry naturally produces a tasty fruit that things like squirrels and people like to eat.
Right. Bears. And
yeah, bears. And so we eat these raspberries. And then the way the process is supposed to work is we're supposed to go off a few hundred yards away and poop someplace where we didn't eat.
Right.
And that puts the raspberry seeds someplace in a fertile location with ready-made fertilizer.
Right.
And it puts them in a place where they're not going to have competition from other raspberry plants.
Right.
And the other thing that when the raspberry seed goes through your stomach... Well, we're going to have background noises, so... We're stuck in the new office with all the background noises. Sorry, folks.
We're working on it.
So when the raspberry seed goes through your digestive system, your system itself strips away certain parts of the outside of the raspberry seed. Mm-hmm. And so that makes the raspberry seed so that it can sprout mm-hmm. later on. If you take a raspberry right off the plant and you just wash off all the fruit and go try to plant those seeds, you can't. It won't grow.
Right.
It has to go through a digestive tract before that seed will even sprout.
Right. And seeds, I'm not necessarily anti-eating seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm anti-eating refined seeds. So, you know, you have this seed and it has all these enzymes and proteins that keep it from being digested.
Yeah.
Which is fine when the seed's whole mm-hmm. and passing through the digestive system.
Right.
But when you grind that seed or you open it up in some manner and, mm-hmm. and allow those proteins and enzymes to suddenly get loose in your digestive system,
right.
they can make some pretty nasty destruction because they are specifically designed to not be digested.
Mm-hmm. And to discourage you from chewing them up and eating them.
Right.
So taking this back to the effects on me mm-hmm. personally of doing this, I listened to Jack's podcast where he talked about it, and then I listened to his other podcast where he admitted, yes, it's true, I eat meat, where he admitted that that he had been doing this for some time, and he made the statement that he eats anything that he could eat raw, mm-hmm. he'll eat it. He'll still cook it right. if it's to be cooked.
And you can eat meat raw.
Yeah, he points that out. Now, I wouldn't want to eat USDA-grade beef raw.
No.
Because the USDA has a tendency to mean nothing when they stamp that on there.
Common denominator.
Yeah. But if you had beef that was properly slaughtered, mm-hmm. properly had the cleaning stuff that used to take place as a common aspect of food handling.
Yep.
Nowadays, we don't have to do that because we have USDA inspectors that say, good enough, good enough, good enough, good yep. enough. And as long as they're doing that, you know, we have a horrible danger of raw foods, right. raw meats, even raw vegetables
yeah.
being contaminated by all kinds of nasties because the government says good enough.
Right.
So it's authorized by the government, ship it out, feed it to the herds, what do we care?
Right.
Anyway, So I started on this process, and it's been a couple weeks now.
Because you've done low carb stuff before.
I have. I went a couple years where, at my worst, when I left GE, and working at GE, that means there's a lot of, you know, we'll use the word working is a relative term. GE was extremely stressful. And there was a lot of thought involved, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of discussions and trying to convince people and trying to manipulate them, trying to manipulate you, and you trying to manipulate them, and it's just all madness, and it was all brain-stretching right. nonsense.
A thing where you sit at a desk all day and think.
Yeah, or argue,
yeah.
you know. So extremely stressful. I was hitting about 265 at my peak at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went through the whole brain injury situation.
Right.
And massive...
And deemed unfit for human contact.
Yeah, they nobody wanted me around anymore. and there was a lot of pain medication, and there was a couple years there that were pretty much a haze because I was trying to get my brain back to where it worked again, and I was trying to work through all the pain medications that I was taking. Not just for the brain injury, but there was neck injury, there was arthritis, there was unbelievable headaches that I'm not even going to go into right now. But
ulcers.
A bleeding stomach that was practically died on that a couple times from my stomach almost taking me out. Having you go in and have them cauterize part of the inside of my stomach to stop the bleeding. And in the process of all that, I decided to try the low-carb thing. Mm-hmm. And so my weight went from 265 down to about 225 mm-hmm. Over the course of, like 8-9 months, something like that. And so that gave me, I felt a lot better.
Right.
Of course, you're not carrying around all that extra weight.
Right.
Of course, you feel better. And then with time, I kind of went back. I never ate a lot of carbs, after that time. And I don't really like sweet things and sugar that much. Mm-hmm. So leaving sugar out of my diet was no problem. Leaving soda pop and that kind of thing, sweet drinks, leaving that out of my diet, that's no problem because right. I'm not attracted to those things anyway. So I pretty much don't have any refined sugar in my diet. That's a big advantage. Mm-hmm. But I still had a lot of arthritis pain.
Right.
And slowly that weight came back. And I haven't weighed myself recently, but I would assume that I was probably in the 250, 255 range. Mm-hmm. Probably about the time that we had your wedding back. It was not your real wedding.
It was the ceremony.
It was the zombie wedding that's mm-hmm. on Facebook. You can see that on Facebook. About that time, I think I was hitting about 255 or maybe even 260.
Right.
And I was really in a lot of pain. Every joint, every day, every movement. And not just the arthritis pain. I was, the restriction of movement was so bad that just climbing in and out of a regular vehicle mm-hmm. was really painful and difficult. Listening to Jack, and I thought, well, I'll give that a try. And because I had been considering this for months anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, well, that's the standard I'll go with. I'm going to cut out all grains, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go with, if I can eat it raw, I'll eat it. Mm-hmm. And if I can't eat it raw. Now, there's one exception to that, and that is olive oil.
Right.
I've kept olive oil in my diet because I like olive oil. And, but you really wouldn't want to eat a raw olive. They're pretty nasty. I mean, you probably could. It wouldn't kill you and it might help keep you alive, mm-hmm. but you're not going to enjoy a raw olive.
Right.
I used to raise olive trees on the farms in the San Joaquin Valley and they're not pleasant. Anyway, so boy, that was way longer than I meant it to be. I'm sorry. So we're about 2 weeks into this now, mm-hmm. and I don't know how much weight I've gained or lost or whatever, because I don't have a scale.
Right.
So that's not the point, really, and that wasn't the point.
Right.
The real point is I can actually lay down in a bed and sleep. Now, you're like, well, doesn't everybody know? No,
right.
I haven't laid in a bed and slept for years. I have to sleep sitting in a chair because of the pain level. Mm-hmm. I can't get in a position in a bed where I'm not in just real high levels of pain. Mm-hmm. So I've had to switch off between chairs, sometimes a chair to a couch, back to a chair, sometimes lay in a bed for 5 minutes and back into the bed or into the chair. I've done that for years now. And now, after a couple weeks of just eating that kind of foods with no grains of any kind, I can lay down in the bed and even lay on my side. It's one thing to lay on my back with pillows under my knees and pillows under the arch of my back and pillows, mm-hmm. and make the shape of a chair in my bed. But to be able to lay on my side and to be able to get a good, deep, sound sleep,
right,
and not wake up totally racked in pain, or not wake up so stiff that I literally can't get out of bed.
And sleep is so healing, too.
It really is.
You know, yeah. You can't, your body cannot repair itself if you're not sleeping properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that's where I'm at. That right. was really way longer than I meant to take. I meant to just drop that topic in as a side thing, and that was it. But that's where I'm at. I can move. I can, you know, there's still pain. I mean, I have arthritis mm-hmm. in my joints, and that's going to be there, you know. So, and I've had, you know, multiple, all the damage in my neck right. is not going to go away.
Right.
Those vertebrae are fused, and they're not moving, you know.
Right, right.
And the same with, even to a certain extent, with my fingers, with the breaks that I've had in the knuckles and the dislocations and all these things. They're not going to, you know, be back to the way I was when I was 19.
Right. But, you know, they're not going to continue to get worse and worse and worse
yeah.
and worse.
Yeah. And because the inflammation is not so much of an issue, the mobility difference is dramatic.
Right.
I was, when I would take the little dog Nikki, my little doggy, mm-hmm. when I would take Nikki for a walk 2 months ago, by the time we would get back, cardiovascular wise, mm-hmm. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I can go long distances. I'm good.
Right.
But the level of pain was really pretty grueling by the time that we would get done with our walks.
Right.
And now doing that walk, I'm doing two walks a day with her.
Right.
And not every day, but most of the time I am. And it's no problem at all. As a matter of fact, we're running. We take off from the house and we run for like half a block because mm-hmm. she's all excited. We're walking. So we take off and I jog. Mm-hmm. And so here's this, I don't know what I weigh, like 250 pounds or something. 250 pound giant hairy man, you know, running with a tiny little dog.
Tiny little dog
and her big old ears flopping in the wind. Oh, so... Now, and I'll just drop one last thing on that, the not eating grains things. I've talked about that before, that everywhere the state appears throughout history, look back in James C. Scott's book, The Art of Not Being Governed, everywhere in history where the state appears, the state makes sure that its cattle are grain-fed,
mm-hmm.
its herds are grain-fed, mm-hmm. its slaves are grain-fed, because the state controls its slaves through the use of grain.
Mm-hmm.
But the top of the state, they don't eat grain.
Because... You know, grains do cause inflammation, and they do cause you pain, and they cause you to not be focused on mm-hmm. what is happening on a global scale.
Yeah.
They cause you to focus on day to day to day to day.
It's alleged that grains cause memory problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting thing because, and I don't remember the exact statistics,
mm-hmm.
But so it's something like, less than 5%, and it may be less than that, it may be like 1% of the mm-hmm. population have full-blown celiac disease that they can test for and they can confirm that it is, in fact, celiac disease.
That's where they do not tolerate...
Gluten.
Gluten, yeah.
And it's, I mean, celiacs is a hard thing to get into because nobody tolerates gluten,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Nobody does well on gluten.
Right, because it's not a natural part of our diet.
It's not edible.
Yeah.
It's like saying, oh, you have an arsenic intolerance. Well, yes, of course I have an arsenic intolerance. It's poison. But celiacs is where it's really, you know...
Mm-hmm. You don't handle it well
right.
at all.
Yeah. And it's something like less than 5% of the population... of the general population have full-blown celiac disease, but
mm-hmm.
something like 30-35% of schizophrenics have celiac disease.
Wow. So there may be...
Yeah.
There may or may not
right.
be...
We don't know, but I mm-hmm. think that's really interesting
mm-hmm.
that there's a much higher percentage
yeah.
in a field that's really affected. You know, that's... You're talking about mental clarity issues.
Right.
You know.
Hopefully somebody can get something out of that. It's not just me rambling about my, you know, my diet.
But I've tried to do the not really paleo because I don't cut out dairy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm eating,
I like milk. I don't drink a lot of milk. I have milk in my coffee in the morning. So, like, I bought a half a gallon of milk. Right now, Cindy, Kai's mom, my wife, is in Missouri with family, and I'm driving back and forth and being both places and doing all this kind of stuff. And so I'm the only one in the house. Kai's just over here visiting.
Taking advantage of the fact that they have laundry facilities.
Yeah. So I bought like a half a gallon of milk, and that's lasted almost 2 weeks now for about a week and a half that a half gallon of milk lasted me. So I don't drink a lot of milk, but I'm not going to stop either.
Right.
And I have butter.
Right.
I eat butter. I like butter. I usually try to at least eat 2 or 3 sticks of butter a day. No.
We get you a lot of butter at my household.
No, I don't eat 2 or 3 sticks of butter. I was teasing. That was a joke.
It would be okay if you did. I wouldn't judge you.
I like cheese. Normally, I eat quite a bit of cheese. I haven't eaten a lot of cheese, but I eat a little bit of cheese every day.
Right.
You know.
Generally, we go to Sam's Club once a month, and I get a big pound and a half block of Kerrygold cheese, which is cheese from Ireland.
Yeah.
And it's all pasture.
And then you just sit down and eat it.
Right. No. It's all pastured cheese. Because it's the cheapest pastured cheese I can find. You know, it's not raw because we're in a quarantine zone for raw milk.
Yeah.
But if I can't get raw, I'm at least going to get pastured. And so I just eat that throughout the month.
So to keep this from turning into the all food podcast.
Well, we had a point. We did. We were going someplace with that.
I don't remember where we were going.
We were, I promise. I wanted to bring up, I'm reading an interesting book called Eat Fat, Lose Fat.
Ah.
And this is by Dr. Mary Enig and Sally Fanon. Sally Fanon is the president and founder of the Weston A. Price Foundation. Weston A. Price is the dentist who figured out that people who ate traditional diets didn't have bad teeth.
Amazing.
It's shocking, I know, right? Because watching the National Geographic Channel for 20 minutes isn't going to show you that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess they didn't have the National Geographic Channel in the, you know, 30s.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, National Geographic Channel. You look on National Geographic and they have some special about natives living deep inside the Amazon forest, way back in with like no outside contact whatsoever, and they go back in there and there's this whole tribe of people that, you know, they put that like red mud stuff in their hair. You ever seen that? And they live in those weird giant grass huts that they live in that are, you know, and they all have good teeth.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, well, there's fluoride in your water though, right? Right?
You brush with fluoride toothpaste?
Yeah, no, none of those things. No, they just, you know, eat a natural diet.
Yeah.
And they don't have bad teeth.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But anyway, this book, it talks about how basically the idea that saturated fat is bad for you is complete, you know, bunk.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
It's not science. It's
At best, it's a silly superstition.
Yeah.
At best,
yeah.
It's a superstition. At worst, according to how paranoid you are, sitting there with your little foil hat on your head, it's a plan.
Yeah, it's, you know, it at the very least has been shown that it is a very carefully crafted marketing design by specific food industries.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to promote it further, you know, I don't know that I could argue with that. I don't know that I agree with it, but I couldn't argue that it's intentional.
That the foily hat people are,
it's
all part of the plan.
But, so I've been reading that, and, you know, it's kind of been on my mind lately because I've been trying, you know, I am not like you. I am a sugar addict. Always have been. From day one, sugar addict. And so my first, but I have a lot of intolerances to gluten and soy, and so I've been trying to cut out gluten and soy and the refined seed oils, which don't come from vegetables, and the term vegetable oil is silly.
Right.
They come from
like
seeds.
Canola is not a vegetable. Canola is grass.
Yeah, it's
Is it grass or is it a?
It's the seed. It's a rapeseed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's the rapeseed plant.
Yeah, yeah. And in a natural setting, it's poisonous.
Yeah.
They put as a matter of fact, Canola is Canadian Oil Company.
Yeah, it's a registered trademark.
They used to produce that specifically as a machine oil. Mm-hmm. And that's during I believe it was World War II. It may have been World War I. But one of the world wars, the Canadian government heavily subsidized the growing of rapeseed mm-hmm. so that they could have oil for the machinery. It was replacing the petroleum oil, mm-hmm. Was in shortage.
Right.
And so they were raising rapeseed. And then when the war was over, there was this panic. What are all the farmers going to raise?
Right.
We have to run in and subsidize, right?
Right.
That's the government's answer to everything.
Right.
So the government of Canada literally interfered in the farming and got hybrid versions and got chemical ways of dealing with the rapeseed in order to make a less toxic oil out of the rapeseed. And They called it canola, mm-hmm. which is Canadian Oil Company. Mm-hmm. So you're eating what used to be machine oil.
Right.
That's what it was. It was machine
oil.
That's
really all it's good for because it's not edible.
Right.
It's really not. And but this book goes into all of that. And I found it very interesting. And last night as I was not sleeping because I was having one of those nights where you lay down to sleep and your eyes pop wide open and you're like, oh, I'm not going to sleep tonight, am I? Nope. I was thinking about it, and I find it very interesting because one of the things that, leading health experts say mm-hmm. is that you have to avoid red meat because red meat has the highest saturated fat levels and it has, cholesterol, and eating cholesterol raises your cholesterol, and, you have to choose heart-healthy fats instead of mm-hmm. cholesterol. And I think it's really interesting because if eating cholesterol raises cholesterol,
yeah,
why do cows have cholesterol?
Well, most people don't realize.
Because cows are,
well, when people are not looking, cows are cannibals.
They're down there chowing down on McDonald's and Wendy's.
No, they'll kill cow right there in the field. The stronger cows will rise up and beat the weaker cows to death with their devil hooves. And then all the cows swarm in there and they just consume the weak cow. They do that all the time.
The farmer comes out and goes, I could have swore I had one more of you guys.
And the little flames in the eyes of the mean cow.
No mistakes. If cows could, they'd eat you and everyone you loved.
That's a Simpsons line. No Simpsons line.
Simpsons did it.
So, yeah. So, cattle eat grain.
Yeah.
Grass. And grains, because they're force-fed grains.
Right.
Not that they would eat grains naturally.
Right.
But we feed them corn mm-hmm. in massive quantities. And soy. And over-proteinized feed. I don't even know what that stuff is. somewhere in my brain, it's back in there, what they shove down the cattle's throats in the feedlots. But you ever actually seen a feedlot? There's some, we used to live in, when I was a kid, we used to live in Kalinga, California. And there was a big feedlot between Kalinga and whatever the next town was, I believe going north of Kalinga. There was a huge feedlot. And, wow, that was nasty.
It's enough to make you understand the vegetarians.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I did an article on that was talking about how that if you, I totally sympathize with vegetarians when they understand what the meat handling process is, mm-hmm. it'll turn your stomach, mm-hmm. And it's not just cattle, it's chickens and all that kind of stuff. And even the stuff that's supposedly,
organic.
Yeah, all that's it's a con. All those labels are a con.
But, I just find it really interesting because, they eat grain. And, you talk to nutritionists and things, mm-hmm. and they say, look, I really like red meat.
Yeah.
What can I eat that is healthier?
Uh-huh.
And they're like, well, you can eat bison,
uh-huh.
which has less saturated fat and less cholesterol than beef.
Yeah, than commercial beef.
But bison are not grain fed.
Right.
You know, bison are grass fed.
Yeah, and then a variety. They're typically out there eating all kinds of prairie grasses.
Right. They're pastured. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, this is logical stuff that when you start to just ask these very basic logical questions, there's no answers to them.
Right.
You know, you can talk to any farmer who raises cattle or pig or anything, chickens, and you say, how do you fatten them up for slaughter? Well, you feed them grain.
Yeah, you overfeed them corn, you overfeed them grains, millet.
And yet we're told day after day after day with the media that people who eat more whole grains have a tendency to weigh less. And where are these facts coming from? Where are these studies? Where is the scientific evidence that's proving this? They can't, when you ask somebody why they believe this, they can't give you an answer other than, well, everybody knows that's what the truth is.
Right. Like everybody knows that the sun goes around the earth.
Right. You know? And they have absolutely no explanation of where these beliefs...
So what's that have to do with spiders?
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you believe... There's really two schools of belief.
You want me to do that part?
You can do that part if you like.
Because that's kind of my forte, you know? Did you catch that? I was French. I'm speaking French.
You're so educated.
I'm cultured and whatnot. Speaking my French.
You sure are cultured like a nice milk.
Although that didn't work. If you're from Louisiana, you can find a lot of people who could speak fluent, sort of Frenchish stuff.
Kind of like French, kind of, if you squint real hard.
Pretty much every time I want to look at something and really figure out what the truth is, I want to really analyze something and take it down to its base to divide away all, push away all the chaff, push away everything that's confusing, push away all the noise, and get right down to its base. I want to find out if something fits. If I really want to seek the truth, I want to see if it fits both aspects of what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. Because either humans are the product of a special creation. Mm-hmm. In other words, some type of entity, some intelligence, specifically planned us.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what the entity is. Entities.
That's not the point. We could be a lab experiment for a little kid in some alien culture,
right,
all the way to the traditional Trinity beliefs, or we could be talking about some kind of a multi-god system. Mm-hmm. I'm not separating that. What I'm saying is, either we are the product of intended, specific, deliberate creation, or we are the product of many, many eons of time of random chance taking place, and the most successful combinations of random chance have produced us. Now, one of those two...
Or both.
Or a combination. One may have used the processes over the other. But I've found that if I bring anything down to that level, I can find the truth.
Right.
I can discover the truth if it matches one of those two methods. So thinking of grains, thinking specifically of grains, either, and I'll use the word God because that's just better, more comfortable terminology, but either God created us to eat grains, intending for us to eat grains with that as a purpose, or he didn't, or we evolved eating grains, or we didn't. Mm-hmm. See, you can take the premise right down to either side.
Right.
So if we were created intentionally to eat grains, then we should be able to go outside and pick them and eat them.
Right.
We can't.
Right.
So if we evolved over eons of time to eat grains, then we should be able to go outside and pick them and eat them, and we can't.
Right.
Now, and you can even take this further. You look at the kind of animals that live entirely off of grass-fed type stuff. Many of them have multiple chambered stomachs. Mm-hmm. Many of them will chew the grass and then they'll swallow it. And then they'll pull it back up again and they'll chew it again and they'll swallow it. And it'll go from stomach to stomach until eventually they remove from it all the nutrients that it takes to digest that. Mm-hmm. If you go down to somebody might say, but what about gorillas? Gorillas eat grass. They do. Gorillas, they don't live on grass like mm-hmm. a cow does. But gorillas eat grass as a part of their diet. Now go watch them in the wild. Here's a couple things you'll see. First off, a natural gorilla in the wild has a massive, huge stomach.
Right.
Kind of like men in America who eat too many grains.
Right.
We blame it on beer, but it's not beer. It doesn't come from beer. It comes from all those sandwiches.
Right.
So the gorilla's stomach, if food passing through there, the gorilla's entire digestive tract is far adapted to be able to get nutrients out of these things that mm-hmm. are digestive
tract.
And even
still the seeds pass through.
And yeah, he doesn't live off of the seeds. So my test then is, and the point of all that discussion, the test is, does this fit logically with the concept that we were created? Mm-hmm. And does it fit logically with the concept that we evolved? Mm-hmm. And if the theory fits both of those equally well, then I'll accept that it might be true.
Right.
And so we put grains up against that, and we say grains fail the test as food mm-hmm. in the special creation category, mm-hmm. and grains fail the test as food in the evolution category. Mm-hmm. Therefore, grains are not food.
Right. And the same thing with, you know, various types of fat, because,
right.
you know, in all of nature, animals mm-hmm. who eat fat,
right.
animals who are not herbivores, mm-hmm. eat saturated fats, mm-hmm. and they eat monounsaturated fats.
Lions, tigers, wolves,
right.
panthers,
bears, gorillas.
Yeah.
Saturated fat, you know, it's people think saturated fat, they think, you know, meat fat. Mm-hmm. But actually, meat fat is only a percentage saturated fat, and there are some monounsaturated fats, and there's a little itty-bitty tiny bit of polyunsaturated fats in there as well. But polyunsaturated fats, in general, are very rare mm-hmm. and almost always compared with a saturated fat or a monounsaturated fat. So you have, like, extra virgin olive oil. That's a monounsaturated fat. Mm-hmm. Coconut oil is a saturated fat, you know. Pretty much any fat that you or I could realistically make.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can extract coconut oil mm-hmm. in my kitchen.
Right.
You know, you can extract olive oil in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you cannot make canola oil in your kitchen.
Mm. Well, unless you're trying to kill somebody.
Right.
Or lubricate an engine.
Right. But, you know, it takes industrial refinement
mm-hmm.
To create these things. And so clearly, you know, mm-hmm. we were not supposed to be eating these things.
Right.
Because if they can only be manufactured in a lab,
mm-hmm.
we shouldn't eat them.
Right.
You know, they're not natural. They're not, you don't see a gorilla out there spreading margarine on his, you know, oh, gotta watch my arteries, you know. No, that's ridiculous. It doesn't happen. You know, and evolutionarily speaking, if we evolved so that the only fats available to us in nature
mm-hmm.
are bad for us, we have failed, evolutionarily speaking, and we need to die.
Well, here, there's totally off the topic now. Same thing with sunshine.
Yeah.
I've said this for years. Somebody says, well, you got to stay out of the sun, it'll cause cancer. And I want to just slap my forehead and yell, "Doh!" when I hear that. Because it's like, okay, my first question, are you a theist? Do you believe in special creation? Or are you an evolutionist?
Because, right.
Because I can gear my argument either way.
Right.
Okay, if you're a theist...
Really, it's the same argument.
Yeah,
but...
yeah. So if you're a theist, you think God created you? You think God put you on this planet? Do you think God is a cruel, evil God that would put you on a planet that has a sun that will poison you and
right.
cause you to have cancer? Is that the God you worship?
Right.
And then they're like, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go the other direction. You don't believe in God. You're an atheist. You believe we evolved here on this planet? Mm-hmm. You believe we evolved on this planet with that sun? Or do you believe we evolved on some other planet and were brought here under this evil sun that's going to cause us cancer? Do you think we evolved here under that sun?
Because if you think we're aliens, if you think we evolved on another planet,
then we're going to have a different conversation altogether.
Yeah, you know.
Which brings us to spiders.
Which brings us to spiders. Specifically spiders from Mars.
Alien spiders from Mars. Go ahead and throw your theory.
Every animal that has eyes, not the weird mollusky creatures, because those creatures are weird, but every animal that has eyes on this planet, I can't speak for other planets, I've never been there, but on this planet, has two eyes. They have two eyes. And they have them in the relative front of their head. Mm-hmm. Except spiders that have a bunch of eyes on their back. Which I think is proof that spiders are alien.
Now, things like certain insects have multifaceted eyes.
But they only have two of them.
They have two of them, and they're pretty much placed in the same area, even though they're multifaceted. But spiders don't. They have, like, weird numbers of eyes, and they're placed around on the middle of their back and stuff.
Right. And I find it so weird because, evolutionarily speaking, wouldn't we want a lot of eyes? Like, wouldn't we want to be able to see what's going... Like, human beings, this is a horrible design in nature. You can't see anything that's going on behind you. Mm-hmm. You've got, like...
Oh, probably, like, less than 180 degrees. Probably got, like, 165, 170 degrees.
We're both standing here with our hands beside our heads.
Trying to figure out what our peripheral vision is. They can't see our hands.
They can't see our hands. But yeah, it's a terrible design. It's a horrible design. Why would you do that? That's so mean. And you would think, you know, different animals on this planet have different number of legs. They have different number of arms. We've got octopus that have, like, you know, crazy tentacles. And we've got beaks. And we've got feathers and fur and skin and all sorts of crazy things.
And two eyes.
Everyone must have two eyes. Two eyes, one nose, one mouth. That's it.
Except spiders.
I'm telling you, spiders are from outer space.
Alien spiders and from Mars.
I'm only half joking about the viruses. Uh-huh. Viruses are really extraterrestrial.
They're very unusual on the Earth.
Because they don't have DNA. Mm-hmm. They have to steal DNA.
Which is makes one think that maybe some comet brushed by Mars picked up a spider and a handful of viruses and then came blazing by here and dropped them off.
No, thank you. You can have them back, please.
There is a theory, I've read this, that virus infections correlate to meteor showers. I've read that. I don't know if that could be totally goofy,
right?
Because there's some pretty goofy things out there,
right?
But, like, specifically the one I was reading was talking about the Spanish influenza that hit in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And the person charted where the initial outbreaks were. Mm-hmm. and it happened in streaks that matched a meteor shower in a specific year. And, you know, as the Earth, let's say there's a pile of rocks in space, mm-hmm. right? Just not even rocks, sand. There's a pile of what we would consider sand in space. Mm-hmm. And it's in one spot. And as the Earth moves through that spot, we get all these meteor showers.
Right.
And then the Earth goes all the way around the sun, comes back again to the same spot, and we pass through roughly that same area again.
Right.
So the person's theory was that each time the Earth passed through that particular section, we got a meteor shower of these sand mm-hmm. that carried this virus. And then we haven't worked our way back into that because the Earth's very rarely goes the exact same path. Each time it wobbles into a new spot.
Right.
So that was the person's theory, and that could be totally ludicrous, but right. that was his theory.
Right. I mean, you find a lot of theories on the internet.
Yeah.
But I just find it really weird.
So that's where spiders came from.
Spiders have multiple eyes. And what else? What else on this? If you can think of something, please tell me, because I can't think of anything that has multiple eyes, you know, more than two eyes. I can't think of any.
Now, we're throwing that out because it's fun time right before Thanksgiving.
October. Halloween.
Halloween. So we're just throwing that out as fun for Halloween, that spiders are evil invaders from Mars. Mm-hmm. We're not really trying to convince you that spiders are from Mars. We are trying to convince you that grain is not food.
Yes. Grain is not food. Spiders are food.
Spiders are food. Spiders are important in the ecosystem, though. Spiders mm-hmm. are our friends. A lot of people are afraid of spiders. Your sister's terrified of mm-hmm. spiders. But spiders in a house are really handy. Mm-hmm. Spiders eat mosquitoes, and I don't like mosquitoes. Spiders eat gnats. You know, that's big in their diet. Spiders eat all kinds of creepy crawlies.
Do you know that daddy long legs, the things that are called daddy long legs, mm-hmm. Are not spiders?
Really?
Yeah. They're arachnids,
yeah.
But they're not spiders.
Hmm.
But Wikipedia told me, so it must be true.
Well, you read it on the internet. It's right there beside the virus from space.
You read it on the internet. Virus from space and the guy who found Sasquatch.
Oh, there
oh,
they were.
Oh, and Obama's a lizard man.
Oh, well, we already knew that. He got elected, didn't he? That's how Bush got elected.
Only the lizard people get elected.
I saw the picture of where he transformed. Did you see that on uh-huh. YouTube? Yeah. Happens all the time. We should end this on a serious note. We've been doing a lot of goofing off here. Taking it back to the whole food thing. The food seems to be the, even though this was supposed to be the spider podcast, food seems to really be the theme here.
Yes, this seems to be the anti-grain podcast. We haven't had one of those in a while.
No, uh-uh. But taking it back to the food thing, there's a person that we did want to talk about, and this is a Canadian farmer named Michael Schmidt. Mm-hmm. Kai brought this up to me, and I hadn't actually heard about him, and Kai brought this up, that Michael Schmidt is a farmer who's being harassed by the Canadian government. I guess, has he been arrested?
Yeah,
is that the story?
His farm was raided, and they arrested him, and I think he's maybe being held. I don't remember if he is actually in custody still.
I'm looking at the story on it, and I'm not actually seeing one way or the other, so I'll have to investigate further to see if he's in custody or not. But either way, he's on a hunger strike, and I'm looking at Food Safety News, and their story says, "Hunger strike to go, quote, until death, says raw milk farmer." For Canadian raw milk farmer Michael Schmidt, a citizen's fundamental right to choose what he or she eats is a matter of life or death, literally. And I agree with him 100%. Mm-hmm. I wholeheartedly agree that the government has no right to tell you, if you want to sit here and eat a pound of mercury, mm-hmm. that is your business. Mm-hmm. It is not the government's business to try to, you know, prevent you from doing something they deem bad.
Right.
When it comes to what you eat, what you consume, you know. If we don't own our own bodies and we can't say what we're going to eat, mm-hmm. then that's not acceptable.
Right.
We have to break free from that. And evidently that's Michael Schmidt's point, is that if I can't be free to eat, mm-hmm. then I will not be. And I really appreciate that. But where the problem comes in, like we were talking about, is the problem we personally have with martyrdom, with dying for your cause. Because mm-hmm. when you die for your cause, you're dead.
Right.
Sometimes that works, you know, like the standard argument is, if they hadn't killed Jesus, would there ever have been a Christian church that ever came up out of all that?
Right.
And I understand that argument. And I understand, you know, if they hadn't killed Gandhi, would the Would these achievements ever taken place if they hadn't killed Martin Luther King? Would these achievements have ever taken place? And I realize that, but I'm pretty sure that if Martin Luther King, if we could ask him today, he'd probably prefer not to be killed.
Right.
He'd probably prefer to stay around and spread his message for another 30, 40 years.
Right.
I'm fairly certain that that's not something that he would have chosen.
And the thing is, like, once you become a martyr, you don't have control over your message anymore.
Exactly.
I mean, you want to take it to Christianity? You want to take it to Jesus? Look what people have done in the name of Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you have no control over that because you're dead.
You can't possibly defend some of the actions that have been done in the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Nobody could intelligently and rightfully defend some of the barbaric activities that have been done in the name of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly,
this guy would not have wanted that.
No,
that was not what he was about. That's not what his teachings were about. That's not, you know, whether you think he was a real person or not, that's beside the point. This persona would not have condoned that. And yet, in death, he doesn't have the ability to speak out against it.
Yeah, he can't clarify it.
Right.
The horrible situation in New Hampshire that happened not that long ago, where a man had been just harassed and harassed and harassed by the legal system through Child Protective Services and through a series of just nonsensical harassment that he had had to tolerate. And this is a situation where he was not convicted of anything.
Right.
It was never even agreed that he had done something that should have resulted in all this. But his life was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
For years and years and years, this went on. And finally, he just got sick of it, and he went to the courthouse, and in front of the courthouse building in New Hampshire, set himself on fire and burned himself to death.
Mm-hmm.
And that act of frustration has been done on numerous occasions. And sometimes, if you want to use this terminology, it works.
Right.
It draws attention to a cause or whatever. But like in the case of the one in New Hampshire, the media just decided to be quiet on it and not say a word.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops literally destroyed all the film evidence of it because it was all on tape. It was all caught it was all recorded. We don't use tape these days, but it was all recorded. And literally the police went in and immediately destroyed all the recordings of it. And there was no repercussions for that action.
Right.
And the media ignored it and everybody looked the other way. And that man died in vain.
Mm-hmm.
He suffered that horrible death
for
no reason at all.
For nothing.
And what about this guy in Canada? I hope he accomplishes something, but I hate to see somebody die, because once you're dead, the fight's over for you, you know?
Yeah.
The music's over.
You know, so the question is, you know, what do you do? You know, what can you do at that point?
Yeah.
You know, is it better to be open and become a martyr?
Mm-hmm.
Is it better to openly defy these horrific practices and become a martyr? Or is it better to be quiet,
subversive,
and be underground and not bring attention to your cause?
Well,
you know?
Despite the fact that we are broadcasting all over the world with this podcast, I say be subversive.
Mm-hmm.
I say guerrilla tactics are the way to go. Guerrilla not meaning violent fighting, but guerrilla tactics meaning underground. In ways that you can't directly be confronted by the enemy.
And it's kind of funny because, you know, we are kind of sitting here telling people to do this, and we're being open and public about it, but that's because we're not actually doing that.
Yeah, we're not on the lines. We're not fighting the battle.
We're not, you know, running raw milk out of our, you know, backyard. We're not, you know, doing
I would like to do that. That would be thrilling. I would love to do that, but I don't have the opportunity, so all I can do is talk.
Right, you know, and right now, talking is not forbidden.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It will be.
It will be.
At some point.
And at that point, you know, making public podcasts and putting them out on public spaces is probably a bad thing to do. And you should be more subversive.
Subversive.
Yes, that word. at that point.
Right.
But right now, we're not at that point yet.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And so we have the ability to be public without facing repercussion, you know, whereas...
While we can.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, practices that are already not tolerated by the state, if you're going to indulge in those practices, you have to do it in ways that are not obvious.
And so the way to win is not to try to convince the state to allow you to do anything.
Right.
We can't win by getting the state's permission to drink raw milk.
Right.
We can't win by getting the state's permission to grow a particular plant or to have commerce in a particular way.
Right.
We can't win by getting the state's permission to allow us a free market in money.
Right.
So that we can have exchanges in whatever kind of money that we feel comfortable with.
We win by doing it anyway.
We win by doing it behind their backs. In quiet, in secret, by developing languages that they can't understand, by developing means of communication that they can't figure out, and by developing an entire black market. I've said this over and over. We need a black market in real estate sales. We need a black market in insurance sales. We need a black market in auto sales. We need a black market in everything, everything. And that will bring the state to its knees. We need a black market in money. We need to be able to do these things. And somebody's listening saying, we already have that. Here's a black market in this. Here's a black market in that. Yes, that's what I'm promoting. And I'm not saying specifically where those black markets are.
Right.
I'm saying find them, develop them, work them, make them happen.
Yep. Yeah. And if you have the chance, you know, don't buy your tomatoes from the supermarket. Buy them from your next door neighbor who grows them.
Yeah.
You know.
And if you have a chance, don't pay them in dollars, in Federal Reserve notes. Pay them in something else. Use something else. Not necessarily barter, but barter's better than Federal Reserve notes.
And words have power. You know, you corrected yourself and you said Federal Reserve notes. And I think that's really important, is to begin calling things what they really are.
Yeah.
You know, just like with the fats and things, you know, I don't call it vegetable oil because it's not vegetable oil.
Right.
It's industrialized seed oil.
Yeah.
And so when you call it what it is, then you take away its power to lie about what it is.
And the state loves to change the meaning of words. I've done whole podcasts on that alone. They love to lie about words and twist them to be things that they're not. Anarchy is not chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos is chaos. Anarchy is freedom.
And you know, what we have right now with the Federal Reserve and with banks and with pretty much all of the market right now is not capitalism.
No, it's fascism.
They call it capitalism.
But it's fascism.
It's fascism.
And we should call it that whenever possible. We should make it clear that we are under a fascist regime, that the ruling regime in Washington, D.C. is a fascist regime. They are not a constitutional republic. They have not been a constitutional republic for at least 100 years.
And quite possibly since the Constitution was drafted.
Exactly. Okay, so we need to wrap it up. We're hitting our time, our hard time frame here. Where the music is going to come. Oh, no, the music is coming. Here it comes. Thanks for listening, folks. I'm Ben.
I'm Kai.
Oh, there's the music. Oh, no.